This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, we'll go ahead and get started. It's a couple minutes past 5:30. Welcome to the sixth and second to last meeting of the semester for GPSA on November 12th. We have, as you can tell, quite a few guests, and we'll get to them in just a little bit. First do a roll call. Alex Black is not here. Mia? Great. Trevaney? Fantastic. Bill? Great. Eric is not here. You knew that, right? Okay. Giovanna? Not here yet. Jonathan? Awesome. Thanks. Liz?
Here.
Fantastic. I'm here. Nicole's here. Alex Moore?
Here.
Great. Thanks. Jenny? Fantastic. Matt? Awesome. Jating?
Here.
Fantastic. Rob is coming a little late. Eric, is he here yet?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Han?
Here. Sorry.
Great. Drew? Fantastic. And Monet?
Here.
Fantastic.
And
thank
Giovanna
you.
Giovanna just walked in.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. So today, for this first part, we're going to do a big discussion about transportation, and we have this is a major piece and a major piece of our expansion of the graduate community initiative, and so we decided that we had a good feeling about the housing discussion we had a month ago, two meetings ago, so we wanted to do the same on transportation because it's an issue that GPSA hasn't really explored too much, and I was able to convince the folks from TCAT come up and be with us today, as well as the folks across campus from transportation. So what we're going to do is something we did similar to last time. We'll have the folks from transportation and mail services do a presentation, and then we'll have TCAT do a presentation, and then we'll go ahead and break out into our groups again. We'll have some facilitators and note takers again. So first of all, we have six people with us, three people via video or via phone, which I'll get to in just a second. And then we have Mark, Gary, and Tanya with us here today. So thank you guys for joining, and I hope you find the discussions lively. So I am going to, Joe and company, are you guys on the phone?
Yes, we are here.
Fantastic. All right. This is the first time we've done this, by the way, in GPSA.
GPSA first.
Yeah. All right. So, Joe and company, we are ready and viewing your presentation.
Okay. This is Helen Spade, VP. I'm the manager of transportation there. And I'm actually using it's really coming down on there. Me?
Uh-oh.
I think I get very good stuff on reception down here. Can you guys still hear us?
I can hear you much better now.
Okay. I'm just going to hold it.
Okay. So, my name is Helen Stay. I'm the manager of transportation programs here at Cornell. And I have a couple of my colleagues here, but they're not going to be able to, they're going to be able to hear what I'm saying or what you guys might be saying. So I'm going to take a few minutes to kind of go over our graduate professional student transportation options. And as I understand it, there'll be opportunities to have discussions afterwards. But we'll be here to answer some questions if you have time to do that. But first of all, I'll take the minute to thank Mitch and the GPSA for inviting us to share information. So it's really coming at a good time. We're planning for next year. And looking to see what changes should be made and what can be made. So I think it's always good to get together and share information and learn from each other. Okay, so I'm going to change the slide, the first one here, and just talk about numbers. I think people are always interested in numbers, and it can mean different things to different people, but this is general numbers. And I want to just make a couple of points here. Of the 400 parking permits that are issued to students, or 1,400, excuse me, 60% are issued as commuter permits, and 40% are issued with residential permits. Of the 1,400 permits that are issued, about a little over 60% are issued to grad and professional students. And when we look at the grad and professional breakdown of those permits, 73% are issued as commuter permits, and almost 30% are issued as residential permits. So that just gives you a little bit of a snapshot of the student permit distribution and just kind of an eye to all the permits that we issue. Now, many of you in the audience may already have a parking permit, so you're kind of pretty familiar with these, but I thought I'd just make a couple points on the long-term parking options. So these are students who decide they need an annual permit, and they're either purchasing a commuter permit or a residential permit. All of our student permits are one rate. The one thing I want to point out this year that we changed was the plus pass permit or the B-lot permit. The B-lot permit provides parking privileges at school in the large lot of the 366. We also added the another parking area on North Campus, which we call the CC-lot, which is off the Joseph Road there. The plus pass or the B permit also provides a transit pass at no additional cost. So that's kind of an added bonus to that. The SD permit is not a new permit type, but it's a conglomeration of lots of other permit areas. So one of the things that we did this year was to reduce the number of permit types for commuter permits in the hope that we're creating a little bit more of a standardization and less complexity. I also want to point out that the SH parking permit, which is the permit for the residential areas of Hasbrook and Maplewood, that also includes a transit pass. And typically those apartment complexes have housed non-traditional students and also students who have families. So I think we started that with the idea that it might be a helpful thing for those families or non-traditional students to have that privilege as well. Short-term parking options. There are several. Some are free and some aren't free. We have 10-minute spaces located throughout Central Campus. I think there's about 30 of them. And no permits required and no payments required for those spaces. The other free option that not everyone may be aware of is after 2:30, Monday through Friday and on weekends, you can park in A lot. With no permit, as long as your car is registered. There's also a number of paid short-term parking options. We have meter parking, and there's three main areas where we have large parking areas. The east side of campus, which is by the Beck College, and on the corner of Judge Balls and Tower Road. On North Campus, we have a telecom lot, lot by our PCC and the Helen Newman lot, and there's a little bit tidbit of information there. The telecommons lot is only $1 an hour as opposed to all the other metered areas are $1.50 an hour. On Central Campus, we have several metered areas that are larger. The Bartels Hall lot, the Hoy parking garage, and the parking lot just over Trippamer Bridge at 626 Thurston Ave. One of our popular Central Campus metered areas is the Willis Strait lot, which has a maximum time limit of 2 hours. Some other parking options that we have is you can stop at the visitor and information booth and purchase a visitor parking permit. And there's built in increments of 2 hours, 4 hours, or all day. And they provide parking pretty close to Central Campus. We have several visitor parking areas by Antibaga Lodge off of Forest Home Drive, just north of Martha Van Hall, the Hoy Parking Garage, the Friedman Wrestling Facility, on Town Road by the parking information booth, and also by the TCRI building at the college. So these short-term parking options may provide options for people who don't want to hit a limit or want to park every day when they come to work or to school, and just walk, bike, and ride with somebody, but sometimes it just doesn't work for them to do those options, and this is a better choice for them. Transit options. We have over 6,000 people who are new to Cornell and have the honor and privilege of being able to ride TCAT buses 7 days a week. The whole idea behind this started, I think, in 2007, was introduced to the transit system in hopes that they'll use that as a way of commuting as opposed to bringing their car to campus. All continuing students get free transit privileges after 6 and on nights and weekends as well. And the honorary transit pass, and the honorary transit pass is a pass that we issue at a discounted rate, $200, and subsidized. And we issue us 2,700 passes. And when I looked at the count, it looked like 50% are issued to grad and professional students. And for those students who don't want to purchase an on-card pass from us, TCAT also has a number of short-term transit options. A monthly pass, or a 15-ride pass, or a portion paid by the ride, $1.50 a ride, once set within zone 1. Alternative transportation options. Carpooling. It's classic. Just share the ride with someone. Either you drive or they drive. And people may do that formally or informally. We do allow people to list other people's license plates on their commuter permits in order to make that feasible. Vanpool is a formalized ride share program. It's open to a whole community at Ithaca. For people who travel to Tompkins County or leaving Tompkins County to go somewhere else. And the program is that we have had at least 5 people, and so riding together regularly. The program is administered by E-Ride, a company that's been around for about 30 years, and has vanpools all over the country, including Alaska. So we currently have 2 vanpools on campus. They are mainly staff on those 2 vanpools, but they're open to students as well. Ithaca Car Share is a way to have a car, access to a car on campus without having to pay the cost of owning a car. One of the benefits being a Cornell community member is that you select to join that program, and you select just in case membership, we'll pay that membership fee. All you have to do is take the application and the usage fees. Ithaca Car Share has about 21 cars in Tompkins County. 5 are on campus. They're in proximate locations to where many students are. There's one in North Campus. There's one over in the lab, on Tower Road, in Carpenter Hall. It has its own reserved parking space. You don't have to worry about where you're going to leave it on campus. Just that if you need to take it somewhere, it's close by. ZimRide is a ride management service. It's a company that is owned by a Cornell alum, and it gives you an opportunity to match up with people if you don't know who to ride with, or if you're looking for someone to share the cost of commuting. It's an online software program that helps people match up. Emergency Ride Call is a program that we've offered for several years. So if your car is located on campus and something happens where you need to get home right away, excuse me, not that your car is located on campus, if we need to take you to your car, which may be off campus, so if it's an unexpected emergency, we will take you to your car. It's been really helpful if you would have chosen an alternative transportation option. Make us feel comfortable in getting that way. Motorist Assist Program provides you, our department, in case you need a jump start, you run out of gas, you have a gallon of gas, you need air for your tire, oh, you need someone to call for a tow service, we can help you out with that. Big Red Bike Program is a bike sharing program. It's free. It is a student-run group, and one of our staff members is advisor to that group. You are allowed to use the bike for 25 hours a week for free, and you check them out on Buris Library at Ann Library. So the new initiative that we've begun here,
is this your last slide? We need to keep,
yeah,
keep the meeting rolling.
Okay.
Thank you.
we have a computer system, and so we initiated some new ways of doing business. We have online permit sales, as well as online sales and citation payments. I mentioned the reduction number of permit areas. In addition, we extended the privilege of OmniRide for spring entrance through a full year in September. Future initiatives. We're continuing to look at ways we do business. Is there a way that we can reduce complexity, increase flexibility, and use new technologies to allow people to access parking through their computer, through a cell phone, or through new equipment? We want to continue our sustainable approach to commuting, but we're researching different ways where we can divide different programs into one and make it affordable for all. And that's it.
Great, thank you. I'm gonna defer questions, if you don't mind, to the folks that are with us, and if you
have
them during the breakout groups, we can they'll be situated throughout the room. So thank you guys very much for giving the presentation and calling in from the conference.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
All right, now I'm going to turn it over to the folks from TCAS. We have Patty Poist, who's the Communications and Marketing Manager, Doug Swartz, the Service Development Manager, and Nancy Oltz, who's the Operation Manager, with us. So I'll let you guys take it.
Okay, cool. I'm kind of in the best place to stand.
Yeah, it's probably up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just out of the way of the projector.
Okay, well, thank you all very, very much for having us tonight. And first of all, how many of you ride TCAS? Okay, that's what you like to see. Okay, so we're going to start out a little bit with our history, which is quite interesting. First of all, let me do a little writing. In 2011, TCAT was named the best transportation system of size in North America. And that's kind of a big deal. Thank you. So, how we got there, the history here is pretty interesting. It stems back half a century with three transit systems, including canals, the county, Thompson County, and the city of Ithaca. And in the early 1990s, our leaders here were wise enough to figure out that it's pretty stupid having three transit systems in one county, and it's fragmented like a lot of local government, and they had the foresight to decide to consolidate. And that was, if you can imagine, whether you study planning or government, how difficult to get away and take consolidation, all the territory wars and all that. So, but they managed to do it. And, I think you have to be on the call. Okay. You can go up to the next one. Okay. So, yeah, they did that, and that meant for having unions get on the same page, for your staff get on the same page. And then in 1996, the New York State Legislature adopted a law authorizing the creation of TCAT. All three went under the same roof in 1992, quite a consolidation process. And here we are today. And I'm going to talk about Rand Cole, our operations manager, is going to talk a little bit about the structure, which is quite unusual.
So the next step that we had to do was to get all the work to determine what we needed to consolidate. So we needed to consolidate was to determine our structure. In order to be funded and to do business, you need to have a structure to go with. And for transit systems, it's transportation law in New York State in which the structure is determined. Originally, we wanted to go in and become a public benefit corporation, which would make up a transportation authority. So for 2 different years, New York State legislative session in 2003 and 2004, we put bills through in order to help us become a public benefit corporation and structure. But it failed. Both years, both legislative sessions, it failed because there was opposition within the state to form more transportation authorities. It wasn't favored at the time. So what we ended up doing is becoming a private, non-for-profit. Our business plan was to become a completely consolidated by January 2005. So when we found in 2003 and then 2004, we had to find something that would be quick enough in order to be ready to be one single transit system by January 2005. So we chose to become a private non-for-profit, which is a little unusual for a transit system. But we did it, and now we can operate in Senate Standard 2005 as a single consolidated system. So now I'm going to pass on to Doug Swartz, and he's going to talk a little bit about how we've been doing and how we've been performing since we became a TCAP.
I'm going to talk a whole bunch of numbers here. I'm going to go real fast. Basically, this was last year. We actually have 3.94 million rides. We're kind of crossing our fingers, we're on track. If everything pans out, like we're hoping we're going to cross that 4 million ride threshold for the first time this year. It's also interesting to note that faculty, students, and staff there at Cornell account for 70% of the rides in the system. You all are very good transit riders, and we really appreciate you helping these numbers up. We actually like to think of Ithaca as kind of a multi-centric city. There's not just one downtown in Ithaca, but really the largest ridership we get is out of stage and Sapper Hall right here on Central Campus. So you really kind of think of Cornell as just, you know, Ithaca is actually the largest central business district. We did all those nearly 4 million rides with 1.7 million revenue miles. That means while the buses in service, you know, not going between Rat and Route or Route and Garage. 127,000 and change revenue hours. And as you can see, we burned a lot of diesel fuel, 423,000 gallons just last year. We do run service 7 days a week, and we run all day here except for New Year's, Memorial Day, July 4th, Thanksgiving, and Christmas Day. Except for Sundays where we are a 22-hour-a-day operation, the first bus out of the garage is around 4 o'clock in the morning, and it starts running the 81, going between ABOT and DMOT, helping some of the early morning workers here at Cornell get to work. And the last bus at night is, of course, Route 90, some of you may have used, serving the North Campus, Central Campus, downtown, and of course that connects to Route 11, going into college, getting back to our garage about 2:30 in the morning. I can't imagine what it is you're doing at that time. We'll run into the service right
away. Hi, we're doing stuff.
We saw 118,000 employees, and we love that 118,000. Most of those are drivers and mechanics. We have about 90 drivers, about 10, 15 or so mechanics. We're a very, very lean office staff. We talk about our departments. Really, we're just department of one. We do a lot of the little. Next slide. Looking at our ridership here. Starting from 2002, we had just over 2.5 million rides. Additionally, we expect to eclipse that 4,000. I think that really tells a story. It's about a 50% increase in ridership in just 10 years. That is absolutely phenomenal. You can see kind of where the ridership spiked a little bit once in 2005. That was after Hurricane Katrina and gas prices spiked. We started seeing $3.50, $4 gallon gas for the first time in our lives ever. We saw a spike then, as well as in 2008. Again, we saw another when people first went up before holding me down. So, we like to brag on our ridership increase because of us, but really it's a lot of things. You know, as we improve service, ridership growth, Cornell has been very supportive, giving me subsidized passes and all first-year students receiving a pass. That's really encouraged people to use the system. Of course, the transit travel demand program that Cornell has, it's kind of hard to park around campus. That also funnels a lot of people into the system, as well as gas prices. So we kind of attribute the increase in ridership to very different things. So we turn it back over now to Patty.
Thank you. I'm going to stand on the slide here so I can see this. My contacts are sticking to my eyes. So as you may or may not know, it's a constant balancing act in trying to fund TCAT. It's sort of like having a big mattress and a too small sheet. You're pulling from one side to the other. The sheet doesn't fit. So one of my analogies. I don't know if you know how we're funded. We're funded by the federal government, by state government, and the fairs. And state government is our largest source of funding. It's what's called State Transit Operating Assistance Fund. We're also funded by fares, and a lot of people think that fares cover the entire cost of transit, and it's such a minuscule amount. In fact, here at TCAT, it's 30%, and that's extremely high. It's 20% of that is fares from Cornell, and we have a volume discount plan with them, and the other 10%. For other riders from their fares. So fares account for very little. It's a heavily subsidized operation. So we're always begging for money. We're always worried about money. It's just like any other publicly funded entity. And we've done a lot of lobbying with Congress and with our state lawmakers to keep up funding or give us a predictable stream of funding. So if you go to the next actually, go to the pie chart. That might be better. I can give you guys if you want numbers later. But you can see how it's broken down. Oh, that's expenses. Sorry. Let's go to revenue number. Okay, so you see that big blue thing. That's the chunk from the state. And, the Cornell partner share. We're also funded by the county, the city, and Cornell. They sit on our board of directors. We have three representatives each, and they give us about $900,000 each year. And that stayed pretty stagnant over the past 5 or 6 years. So, as Doug and you, we're very lean, and not only in staff, but in money as well. And we can only hope that when you guys go out there and lead the world, that you'll get your leaders on public transportation. People out of the highways, out of their cars, and in the buses. So, anyway, we'd be delighted to meet with you afterward and talk to you. And ask us anything, give us ideas, and thank you.
Okay, thanks. So thank you for giving that presentation. And they're also going to be around and mingling with us all in our breakout discussion. So we'll move to that now. I just want to bring up a quick bit of data that GPSA did in the study from 2001 that puts into perspective how graduate and professional students go where they need to go on campus from where they live. And so the chart at the top indicates how most graduate and professional students get to campus. And 44% take public transportation and about a third walk. So keep those kind of numbers in mind as we talk about different issues things today. So if you don't remember, you might not actually be able to read this, but these are breakout discussion sections. So we'll go ahead and break out into four groups again, and we'll talk about these different questions. So while you guys move around and move to your sections, the folks from TCAT have some materials up here at the front, and I think there are some brochures somewhere from you guys. You guys already have them? Okay, never mind. Oh, they're right there next to Jonathan Hill. So stop by and pick some stuff up. And we'll go ahead and have humanities over here, social sciences here, physical sciences, and biological sciences over here. All right.
I'm doing social sciences.
Yes, you want. Oh, yeah. You guys just want to join whatever. Just join a small one. All right, so thank you guys. Thank you everyone from Transportation and TCAT for joining us We really appreciate you guys being a part of the discussion. I hope you found it useful. I know we probably cut discussions short, and there might have been other things people wanted to say. And so I really want to encourage you guys, if you have feedback on transportation or other topics, to go ahead and email the exec board, which is just the gpsa@cornell.edu. Just email us some feedback that you guys have, and Eric, Nicole, and I will make sure it goes into the process. And if you guys have specific questions for TCAT or transportation, email them to me, and I'll go ahead and pass them along, because I think they might be of mutual interest to the rest of the GPSA. So again, you can email me, Nicole, one of us on the exec board, and we'll make sure that we put this feedback and information into the GCI process. So I'm going to keep us moving forward. First, we're going to hear a report from Matt. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to make a statement that if you haven't signed in already, please do so, so we have a good idea of who attended this meeting, so we'll have
Thank you.
Idea of, so when we write stuff in GCI,
You should sign in every time, but especially today.
Especially when I remember the sheet. But
okay, great. Well, we're going to move on to a quick report from Derek, a.k.a. Nighthawk Evanson, who is the graduate trustee.
All right. So how many of you have heard, so this is just like word on the street, like it was mentioned at some point in passing, have heard of the Board of Trustees at Cornell University? How many of you would say you know what the Board of Trustees is or what they do? Oh, wow. That was like hugely more than I anticipated. Maybe you know more about it than I do. So at any given time, there's one graduate student and one undergraduate student on the Board of Trustees, and we have four meetings a year. So this is our meetings were about a week and a half ago in Ithaca. And so it's just sort of an update. I want to mention a few issues that were important or relevant to graduate students that we discussed at our board meetings. I think I said discussed it. That's not accurate. This is what the board does. So that's a quote from the university bylaws. There's 64 of us, including David Scorton and some ex officio people like the governor of New York, but he doesn't usually come. We set the annual budget and financial plan. That's a major issue, but also administering the endowment. There's been some questions about consolidating of academic programs recently. That's something that we handle, what academic degree granting programs exist on campus. So let's move on to the next one. So these are four things that we discussed at the last trustee meeting that I think might be relevant to graduate students. One was Mitch came and just starting about a year ago, the president of the GPSA is now sort of an ex officio member, non-voting, of the Board of Trustees. And so Mitch, on a few different occasions throughout the weekend of our meeting, gave updates on the GCI, and hopefully we'll be giving a more detailed presentation to the board at our March or May meeting, talking about what the progress on the GCI is, and you know the board trustees is really interested in sort of strategic plans and thinking about long-term vision for the university, and so the GCI is something that can really relate to, and so you all stay updated for their feedback once you all finish the envisioning process for the Graduate Community Initiative, of which all these things that we're talking about, like transportation today, that's part of it. And so another thing we discussed was a commitment to internationalization. That is a major issue on the president and the provost agenda right now, trying to encourage us to have a more international presence at the university, and whether that means having international focus in course instruction, whether that means having international experiences, whether that's through doing research or summer internships or things like that in other nations. And so a 57-page or so, or 67, I don't know, report was issued on internationalization. It's available on the web now if any of you are particularly interested in this, or you can talk to either me or Mitch afterwards. But it's a lot of the focus of the report, it says student, and then in parentheses it's like graduate, professional, and undergraduate. But the issue relates a lot more to undergraduate students than particularly to graduate or professional students. So if any of you are interested in this topic of internationalization, I think Mitch and I are very willing to hear your ideas and to convey them to the provost. We've both mentioned to the provost that we think there's a little under-focus on how international objectives are going to relate to graduate students. That's not saying that we're going to require people to take a foreign language or a course. We just want to know if the whole of the university is trying to have an increased focus on what role focus on international topics plays in our education. We should have a strategic, you know, goal for what that should look like for graduate and professional students. Next is plan of action on MOOCs. Can anyone tell me what that acronym means? Is anyone familiar with that?
It's the multi-online open courses.
Massive open online courses. Yeah, that's what it is. So it's like these courses that have like 100,000 people taking it, and it's professors giving instruction online. The university is poised to move on this topic. I'm not going to talk much more about this, but if you're interested in the topic of the massive open online courses and the role, I mean, some of you maybe someday will be faculty members, but just thinking about the role that that can play in instruction and what Cornell's role should be in offering or encouraging faculty to participate in this form of instruction. And, you know, ostensibly, if it became a larger part of instruction, there might be TAs involved in it at some point as well. So it does, I think, relate to graduate student issues. And the university will be probably trying to decide what our position is going to be. A lot of our peers are already involved in consortiums that offer products through massive open online courses. And concern about potential sequestration. As of yesterday, it seemed the news looked like the congressional bodies were going to hopefully be avoiding sequestration, but that's a budget process that which could affect graduate students' availability of money for graduate students.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit later.
All right. Yeah. Mitch will talk about that. And we care about your input. The Board of Trustees, it seems like an aloof group. You know, some people do fly in on their private jets, not me. these meetings. But the Board of Trustees really care about your input, and you know, there are many trustees you can contact, but you can always contact me as a first point if you have issues that you think could relate to the work that the board does. So thanks for time.
Yeah. And just so you guys know, for some of you who might not know and are relatively new, Derek was president of GPSA, what, three years ago?
2009-2010.
Okay, there you go. So he knows GPSA. Thank you very much. So a quick report from the executive committee. Today is the celebration by the federal government of Veterans Day. So I just am curious, is there anyone here in the room who is a veteran who served in the military? Yeah, I was curious about that. But I'm sure everyone has family who served in the military. Yeah? Is everyone? Fantastic. Okay, well, happy Veterans Day. Just a quick update, our next meeting on November 26th, right after Thanksgiving, President Scorton and Vice President Murphy will be here. So what we want to do is if anyone has questions to ask of them, go ahead and send them to me, and then we can start out with a few questions from before, and then I think President Scorton and Vice President Murphy really do like to have a candid discussion. I've been to some of their presentations at other bodies, and they do appreciate that. So look forward to that. We also have the rescheduling of the space utilization study forums. They were during the hurricane, and the consultants couldn't come. So they're going to be Wednesday, November 28th and the 29th at those two times. And there's an email as part of the GPSA Buzz. This was mentioned. And so please, I really encourage you guys to sign up for that. It makes a big difference. It really does. It's a high-level study, but it really does affect how people in your field get office space, get classroom space. It affects it all. Also, you get $10 in Cornell Dining. I think that's pretty awesome. That's what I'm going for. Just kidding. Derek did mention this internationalization report. I'm sure there are some of you who do research on international topics or through your professional programs do work abroad. So I'm actually looking for a couple people to work with Derek and I on really going through the internationalization report and seeing if we can suggest some more graduate and professional student focused topics. So if you're interested in that, please do email me. Shouldn't take that much time. And the provost and Dean Barbanous, who came last time, do want to hear about it. Great. Now I'm going to move on to another topic of mine. So last weekend, or 2 weekends back, I guess, I represented Cornell GPSA at the National Association of Graduate and Professional Students, NAGPS, which we became a member of last year. There's about 150 people there from about 50 different schools across the country. And I gave 2 presentations. I gave one about engaging local government, given my background in lobbying and stuff like that. And I also gave one on strategic planning that is kind of focusing on our GCI efforts. And some of the themes that I heard from this conference among all the graduate and professional student organizations that were there is really that GPSA here is far ahead of the others. I mean, we have the ear of the administration. They come to our meetings. Thank you, Jan, again, as always. And, you know, we really do have, we're lucky in that regard that the administration listens to us. The fact that you guys can, if you want, email President Skorton about anything, and he will respond if you do that. And so we do have a very responsive administration, and in speaking about that to other grad student leaders, they were really jealous. Our GCI process we're doing really is innovative. Very few other schools have anything like it. That we have a solid policy document that says, here administration, here's what we think about our community and here's what we think we should do going forward. Really no other school has that. And a lot of people were, again, jealous of us. So it was great. And then in general, you know, resources at campuses are lacking for graduate and professional students. We're often left out of thought processes by the university. We all know the topic. And we have some fantastic advocates for us at the administrative level. And I certainly do that. It's my job. Nicole and Eric and Nighthawk and all of you do that too. So keep doing that. Another aspect that was talked about at a really broad scale at the NAGPS conference, because the NAGPS is essentially an advocacy group. They also provide resources. They provide health insurance to their member organizations and students. They're also a lobbying group, so they do a lot of work in D.C. And one of the big topics of discussion was what Nighthawk had mentioned, the budget sequestration. So basically what happened is because the Congress couldn't make a budget last year, they set in motion that if they don't create a budget by the end of this year, by December 31st, then automatic 8.5% cuts would go across the federal government. And some economists, their internal economists in the government and outside, have projected that lead to a 1.5% increase in the unemployment rate and just really be really horrible for our economy. Likewise, it would deal a serious blow to research at universities. Cornell stands to lose many millions of dollars of federal research money if this goes through. We aren't entirely positive, but graduate student loans could be affected by it. We're you know, likely to see significant effects if budget sequestration happens. So I'm definitely going down to D.C. At the end of November to meet with some of the New York senators and congresspeople. If anyone's interested in joining me, I know a couple people have talked about it, and we're going to solidify some things. But if anyone's interested in joining me, basically just to share your story with the senators, to say, I do research that's funded by the federal government on, I don't know, genetic diversity in birds or something. I don't know. I don't do much research. Something like that.
Birds and X.
Yeah, that's, Nicole can tell you all about her research at some point. It's being recorded too.
It's in the minute.
So you know, we do want people to come down and tell their story about, you know, why they're doing research and the passion they have for it. That's really going to sway senators and congresspeople. So if you're interested in that, please do let me know. You all probably know my email address, but it's there again. Now I'm going to move on to Nicole from the Ivy Summit.
Yes. So Yevgeny and I, and also Chris Korda, the director of the Big Red Barn, and Jana LeMay, the new assistant dean for grad student life, went to the University of Pennsylvania for the Ivy Plus Summit, which is a summit of all the graduate student organizations from each of the Ivy League institutions plus MIT. So the main sort of, well, kind of like what Mitch was talking about, a lot of the other universities are quite jealous of Cornell. And one of the things that struck me, I gave a presentation on Cornell GPSA and our structure, and what struck me is that the GPSA is actually the most government-y of all of the different graduate student associations. Many of the other associations have major focuses on also doing programming efforts as a big component of what they do, but we really have significantly more legislative authority over the activity fee and where that money goes, as well as just, again, we're really empowered in terms of how the administration listens to the needs of graduate students. No other university that I've yet encountered has graduate student elected trustees, for example, on the Board of Trustees. That's a really, with voting power, that's a really big deal. Some of the things that we talked about, a big one, of course, is institutional memory for student governments. This is always a big challenge, is how we sort of pass on the knowledge. And to that end, the GCI has been a really powerful document for us. The main focus of the Ivy Summit was building mental health resources. So we listened to a presentation by some mental health professionals at Penn on particularly mental health resources for international graduate students. Cornell, given that, for example, our incoming class this year of graduate students was almost 50% international students, there's becoming an increased importance for universities to provide additional support for helping international students understand and integrate into the American academic climate. Of course, we all probably went through an adjustment period in understanding graduate school, but that can be a particular challenge when your educational experience was very different. And they had a lot of really interesting different suggestions. One of the things they were doing was a workshop on navigating the U.S. classroom that was far past capacity, but that also is promoting things like help-seeking behavior and educating them about the resources, international students about resources on campus, as well as just strategies for understanding relationships with your advisor, how to speak in class, things like that. Other things were, at MIT they have a thing called REFS, Resources for Easing Friction and Stress, which was basically, they have students who, within each of the different fields that sort of serve as the contact person when there's particularly something like challenges between an advisor and their student that serve as sort of the first contact about how to negotiate that. Currently, if you have an issue with your advisor, you would talk to your DGS, and then as things might need to go up the chain, it would go all the way up to the graduate school with Jenna LeMay. But this kind of came out as a neat opportunity to sort of head things off at the pass and find better solutions and also support students who are having difficult relationships with their advisors. And I think Jana's really excited about looking into something like that here at Cornell. Just to keep this brief, another thing that kind of came up, I gave a presentation on emphasizing the importance of graduate student programming in space. And one of the things that sort of struck me about, that sort of came out of it was many of our peer institutions have important roles for programming fellows, where they're actually graduate students who are paid to do programming, to hold events, to do wellness events, things like that. And this isn't a model that Cornell really has. There are fellows at the Big Red Barn, but it's pretty limited. So I'm just going to hand it over to Evgeny had a couple thoughts too.
Yeah, I just had some interesting observations that I took out in the meeting. One is that there's a couple of common focuses across all the Ivies, and I'm curious what they were. And to me, it seems that dental health is a big issue. They used to not have it, and now it's just not good enough. It's something that came up in the student advocacy committee meeting. And so dental health, I think, will work on it this year, because a lot of Ivies have been talking about gym library hours. We've had many conversations about that here. So that's interesting. Transportation, breakout session today, and mental health, you know, something that we deal with all the time. So, you know, even though we're all in different places, we deal with similar things. And a couple of quick facts that I thought was pretty cool. MIT has the largest graduate student-run career fair. All graduate student-run, something like 300 companies, 4,000 students walk through the doors. So it's something that Anthony was here talking about a career fair, and it's something that we should definitely think about as a graduate community. You can use iClickers, so everybody in the back, if we have a question, you would vote on an answer. So
we could hold our meetings with iClickers here.
Yeah, information is getting involved in the back. Class ring is something that's getting momentum. MIT does it. So if you're a graduate student, you can buy a class for another year. If you graduate too late, you can change your year free of charge. So I got the name of the company. If we want to talk to a little bit of community across campus, it's something we could work on. Everybody emphasizes image and how, as a graduate student group, it's important to be on Facebook, it's important to have a banner, it's important to advertise. And it's a Facebook, having parties, you know, cooking, chatting with people, which is really the best way to do that. People talk about how to get students engaged with all the technology we have. Personal contact. If you tell a friend to come to an event, they will. If you get an email, they won't. So I'll link them out from later to tell your friends. Something more general, there's now an exit survey. So there's a couple of surveys that you've heard about. But an exit survey for all graduate students. So the Ivy League dean who met previously agreed to have the same set of core questions in their exit survey, which is really cool because one of the issues was, even though we're all meeting, who's doing well or what? So now, starting this year, I think we're all going to agree on a set of exit questions, and then we'll get that data so that we can actually have data to end conversations with mystery across the mental health. And the institutional memory is a big thing. There's a couple of cool options, like UPenn has a story. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's only done for a party, take pictures, and then post them on Facebook.
Yeah, and the last thing is the next one is at Columbia. So whoever's involved next year, it's going to be a trip to New York City. Columbia is hosting.
A lot of fun. You meet a lot of good people, so definitely you should all go. Some of you can go next year.
Great. Thank you, guys.
I have a really quick question.
Yeah.
Is there any way that we can get these types, these notes typed up, so that we could add some point of information we really want to share with the field?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll work on that. Either just the minutes, or we have a recording at least. So yeah, we'll get something to you guys. Yeah, is Bill still here?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Do you have anything? What?
No, all right. Thanks. Want you guys to think about the student activity fee and think about if it is serving you the way you believe it should be serving you. So if you don't know what that is, go to cornell@ukfa.com and go into our vault and see activity fee, and you can see where all the money is allocated. I know some of you were here last year and know where it's allocated, maybe too well. But just think about that and possible any restructuring of the activity fee for next year to get there.
Okay. Marcus is gone again, but if you have any buzz things, send it his way. Vinay, do you have anything? Okay. Kristen? Or Giovanna?
Yeah, we got a literature this Thursday. That's
But also, don't miss Yevgeny's update. sorry to cut you off, Giovanna.
And as Danny said last time, if you want to go to the
town hall.
The town hall, and then afterwards to the mixer, you're welcome to do
it. All right, I'm hurrying us along. So Yevgeny, you're up.
So the breakout session that we had two or 3 weeks ago, we got you invited on issues, built an informal survey. They matched exactly the three most important issues that you guys seem to think are important are: one, career resources; two, sense of community; and three, mental health and well-being. So we're having, as you know, student advocacy town hall this coming Thursday. So you either go to the mixer, then go to this quickly, or go to this, then go to the mixer right after. It should end around 9 o'clock. It starts 7:30. We'll just create all memorial rooms this Thursday. We'll have introductions on each one of these topics, and we'll have breakout sessions where we get to really put input, and then so we'll come back, and so we get a lot of information. And if you could hit the next slide, I'm going to send you an email right now. I'm clicking send. It went. So all of you UKFA members just got an email advertising this event. Please forward it to your field or school, and come on out. And tell your friends, right? Personal contact. That's what you do. So, questions, email.
Awesome. Thank you, Yevgeny. So we're going to move on to now, just now, to the new business of the day. You all should have had the October 29th minutes sent to you. Are there any changes or amendments to the minutes? Yes, please. It's misspelled. Okay, great. We will. Is there any opposition to making sure that Sherry's name is spelled correctly? Fantastic. Make sure that's done. Any other amendments to the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Fantastic. Now we'll move on to new business, but before we do that, is there any opposition to extending our meeting for 10 more minutes? Fantastic. Then we'll extend our meeting for 10 more minutes so we can make sure we get through this new business. Sorry that the presentations and the discussions took so long today, but I hope they were good. So I'm going to turn it over to Trevaney to talk about resolution number 10. Fantastic. And I have it open if you want to refer to specific things.
Sure, if you want to open it up. So I had something planned, but that's fine. I'm going to see it along. People have been asking a lot of questions today, so I'm also going to ask questions. How many of you plan to be on the job market or get a job one day? Right, yes. How many of you plan to be in a relationship or have a family one day? How many of you expect your desire to have a family will interfere with your ability to get a job or your potential career path? Interesting. So, oh, good, okay. The point is that this is for women, entering the academic or professional job market can be a really tough thing to navigate, especially because a lot of graduate professional students are in male-dominated fields. And that can create a lot of potential issues when it comes to figuring out how to say, you know, I plan to have a baby and that might change my tenure track lifetime, or I plan to have a family, and so I might not be able to work 80 to 100 hours a week in a professional setting. And whether or not, I mean, we can have a discussion about whether or not that's fair, right? That's a separate issue about patriarchy, and we won't get into that. But what is in the power of UTSA, and I think, and is important for the community, is to ask the university to help women learn how to navigate those tricky waters. Currently, there are a lot of career resources available to us, and we've had presentations in GPSA, but none of those resources are really targeted to understanding or helping women figure out how to work along these structures that kind of serve to these existing structures that are detrimental to long-term career growth. So myself and a couple other women from GPSA have put together this resolution asking the university to create more and better programming dedicated to women and also people with families and how to navigate the potential issues that they'll come up against, as well as creating cross-field programming. There's a lot of stuff going on in lots of different departments, but as a student government, I have no idea when Women in Science is meeting, or I have no idea what SEPA is up to. And so it's important to have some sort of central hub to help organize that and give us an opportunity to reach lots of different areas. And so there's just some example ideas in here. And then also asking, if you could scroll down, asking the President's Council on Cornell Women to establish stronger ties with graduate professional students. I had no idea that this group even existed until I started this resolution. And that's, I mean, that's problematic. I consider myself an educated person. But there's not a lot of there's not a lot of outreach, and there's not a lot of advertising about these different resources for women. So I think it's important for the university to bring this to light. And also asking the GPI to focus on these issues as they go forward in their position. So I hope that we can have like a little bit of a discussion or at least something. If you think this resolution is not strong enough and needs to be stronger, I would totally open to that. I think this is an important issue, and I'm always happy to talk about women's issues. So, okay, thank you.
Thanks, Trevaney. So now we're going to move into discussion on this resolution. I have one amendment to offer first. And it's to change this. Trevaney is a voting member, and so my amendment my amendment is to strike after Trevaney Gandhi in line 65 to replace it with humanities voting member. Considering this is a relatively small change, is there any opposition to that? Fantastic. And Trevaney, I know you have a...
Right. Also, when we asked the GPI to acknowledge several topic areas, I have to say, such as... Oh, also that, right?
career resources and family services, and then also to capitalization.
Actually, that was the name of the resolution. That was the full name.
Okay, so
yeah.
So as I understand it, your motion is to amend the resolution to include in line 50 such as career resources and family services. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Fantastic. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Great. Is there any objection to including this amendment? Fantastic. We'll consider it amended. All right, now we're moving back to discussion on the resolution as a whole. Please.
I have a few little things to stop. I guess I'm proposing an amendment. Like,
sure.
Really minor one.
Yes, that's perfectly fine.
And then maybe I'll be wrong. Feel free to vote against. I think, and so now it's changed, but does that minus 50?
This one here?
Take an error, I think, if, based on what follows.
I think it works.
Would you like to take it out?
Okay. I
mean, you can propose it.
I don't know. Okay. I would like to propose it, yeah.
Okay. So that lines 48 reads, that the ad hoc committee to assess the progress on and update the recommendations of the GCI acknowledge that several topic areas, such as career resources and family services, may have unique, et cetera. Take that out.
And that is it.
Okay. Just that there? Okay. Is there any opposition to that amendment? Fantastic. Great. What are your other two ideas, please?
Resolves under A. And yeah. Increasing the number of programming and events. I don't know, just increasing the amount of programming and number of events or something like that.
Okay. So, if I'm hearing you correctly, I'm going to suggest increasing the amount of programming and the number of events. Is that adequate? Okay. Is there any discussion on that? Is there any opposition to amending the document as such? Fantastic. Anything else?
I'm
off. Okay, no, please. Evan's not here, so we have to have someone.
Line 5.
Okay.
The job market and the professional world draft.
Okay. Is there any opposition to including that word? Fantastic. Great, thank you. No, this makes our documents better. It seems small, but this really does make these documents better, because these go on the website, you know,
forever.
For eternity. And people in 50 years are going to look back at this, and we're going to appreciate even minor changes as this. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Any other discussion on Resolution 10?
I'm going to call the question.
Okay. Is there any opposition to calling the question? Fantastic. So now we'll go ahead and vote on Resolution 10. All those in favor of passing Resolution 10 as amended, please raise your green placards. Are you raising yours, Drew? 15. Fantastic. Any opposed? Sorry. Okay. Great. The resolution passes 15 to 0. Thanks, Trevaney and company. Great. Now we will move on. So our next area of the new business is, because last time we created the faculty awards committee, and we charged them with maintaining the faculty teaching, advising, and mentorship awards to make that a yearly event, and to keep that going forward as a standing committee. So as of right now, because of that resolution we passed last time, the bylaws have been amended to include this. But at the current time, we're without a chair. So what we need to do is
today is to elect a chair. And just as a reminder, this is the language from the bylaws as they are now amended. And this is kind of the duties of the chairperson. It's relatively self-explanatory as to what they do in comparison with the other committees, but they have a little bit different position as they also are going to work with some outside groups and work to get solicit nominations and make decisions on the award recipients. I don't know, Nicole, you were on the committee last year. Do you want to offer some more informed information than me?
No. I wrote it all into the bylaws when we wrote the resolution. So, okay.
So what we'll go ahead and do is we'll take nominations for chair, and if there are more than two nominees, then we'll each have them make a statement, and then we will go ahead and do a vote. So right now we'll open it for nominations. Are there any nominations for chair of the Faculty Awards Committee? Nicole?
I'd like to nominate Parag Mohanty.
Do you accept?
Yes.
Fantastic. Any further nominations? Going once? Going twice? All right, fantastic. So we still do need to vote. So what we're going to do is we're just going to do a voice vote. All those in favor nominating or approving Parag as chair of the Faculty Awards Committee, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Fantastic. Parag is our new Faculty Awards Chair. Yeah. You're welcome to say something if you'd like. But
I think it was an extremely great opportunity to actually see that students take time to write about their advisors. This is something I actually said last time during the actual award ceremony, that you're too lazy if you only come out to meet you. But to write something about our advisors and take time to do that goes a big thing. And I hope when we do send out the nomination criteria this year again, you as well as your friends should nominate an advisor who is going to be deserving to get this award. That's all I can
say. Great, thanks so much. Now we'll move into open forum. Amy wanted me to make a quick plea. One of her friends, I think friends, you said, from the Dryden Fire Department is organizing some responses in Amityville, New York. They had their issues with Hurricane Sandy, and so this firefighter is planning to take some items down. So if you do have some items that you'd like to take and donate, this is in addition to the Stuff the Bus event that the university organized. Please send them to the wonderful folks at the Assembly's office in 109 Day Hall. It's a great place to visit anyways. So take them there and they'll make sure that they go on to the Dryden folks. So thank you. Is there anyone else for open forum? Great. Seeing none, is there any opposition to adjourning the meeting? Fantastic. Meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.